On this Christmas Eve, I wonder, how enthusiastic are you about the Incarnation? That's the question I want us to think about tonight. The story of God becoming human. Does it fill you with wonder, with joy, excitement? I imagine you're here tonight because you're looking for hope in this world. Because Lady Hope has got lost somewhere in the midst of the Christmas rush, in a season of frantic political leadership challenges, in a season where everything is supposed to be all right, but most of it is all wrong. Lady Hope gets lost somewhere. I was driving through Grand Rapids last night, and I noticed a house that had the most beautiful fairy lights lit up around it. And if you know me, I love pretty things. And these lights caressed the gables, they laced through all the trees, and quick as a flash, I thought to myself, next year we're going to have a house just like that. And I caught myself on and thought, what has that got to do with Christmas? But when you think about it, we all do that, don't we? We look at the house down the road and think, they're more hopeful than we are. They're doing Christmas better than we are. We look through the beautifully decorated windows and think, this family knows how to celebrate Christmas. But all of this is superficial wrapping over the pain we all carry, over the emptiness we all feel. In every home, whether it's that empty seat tomorrow at the Christmas dinner table, or whether it's that sense of disappointment that this year was not all you thought it was going to be. And that's why we need to return to the Incarnation. Because that's where we get hope breathed right into the very deepest recesses of our very lives. Because Incarnation is that place where the divine touches the human, where God gets intimate, closer than our breath. And that's what this beautifully depicted liturgy cover is all about. Where the divine meets the human. And this cover is going to appear right throughout this next year because there's 7 moments in our liturgical calendar where heaven meets earth. The first is the Incarnation, where the heavenly host sings over the tiny Christ child. Then we'll move to baptism, where the heavens open again and the dove comes down with the Father's voice. Then there's the transfiguration, where Jesus is transformed and angelic beings surround him. There's Good Friday, where the curtain is torn and heaven meets earth again. The resurrection, where Christ breaks through the earthly realm. The ascension, where Christ is received into the heavenly realm. And finally, Pentecost, where the Holy Spirit visits the people of God and comes down. These are the thin places. But it all starts with this Incarnation. And how do we recover our enthusiasm for the Incarnation? I want to suggest there's one wrong way to do it and there's one right way to go about this. First of all, the wrong way, because you see, throughout all of Christianity, so many great thinkers have tried to encapsulate what the Incarnation is. Irenaeus, in the second century, wrote this beautiful statement, God became what we are that he might make us, in the end, what he is. And then 200 years later, Athanasius strengthened it by saying, he became man that we might become God. Now that's bold. He became man that we might become God. Especially when you think what sets us apart from all other world religions is that we're a monotheistic faith. There's only one God. That's what the Shema says. And so Athanasius and Irenaeus were just so bold in saying he became man that we might become God. Does that not threaten this idea that we've one God? Was this not the catalyst on how the fall happened? We all wanted to become like God. And you can see how people got scared with this kind of theology. And there was a certain Christian pastor in the 4th century, Arius, who said, let's try and protect God. He's so holy, he's so other. There's no way he can share humanity with us. And so Jesus is only a creature to teach us about God. And that's where the Arian controversy began. Our relationship to God becomes this distant, teaching relationship. There's no shared life, there's no shared love, there's no shared communion. And Eugene Peterson wrote, if I believe that God is like this, if I believe that God can't share himself in any personal or immediate way, but only in impersonal, remote ways, then I'm going to act that out. As a parent, I'll be remote to my children. I'll treat my spouse as one who's there to meet my expectations. And each time I suppress my capacity for personal relationship in favor of impersonal status or function, I lose a little of my own image of God, humanity. That's the Arian way. Let's protect God. He was noble in trying to keep God high and lifted up. But it's wrong and it's wearing. Have you ever tried to protect your children? It wears you out. You soon lose your enthusiasm. David Adam wrote about the danger of trying to protect and possess God. He says, too often the church talks as if it possessed God, as if it could produce him at will. With some people, there's a danger of feeling we can produce him like a white rabbit from the folds of a coat or from the leaves of a book, that he's something we own and can give to others. It is at such a point Christ does the vanishing trick. And the church has got caught in this imperialist role, saying to others, I have this, and I know what's good for you. Without what I have, you're poor and ignorant. I have the riches for your poverty. But this has destroyed rich cultures and beautiful treasures of other lands. A story was once told about a young African-American who visited this fashionable, on the edge, white-dominated church. But he found it so hard to find his place there. And so after a month of trying to get in, he prayed in exasperation to Christ and said, why might this be so? And the reply from Jesus came, I'm not sure either. For I've been trying to get into that place for years too. So one unhelpful way to recover our enthusiasm is to try and protect God as if he needs our help. And that's wearying, it's wonderless. And in the end, there's actually no room for God. No room in our heads, no room in our hearts, no room in our homes. No room in the inn. Isn't that where it all started? So the alternative is to be open. That something's happening here on the cusp of midnight. And you need faith for that. Faith to touch the thin place of mystery. That God came down and found a place to dwell, even in that place where there was no room. That unlike this first creation where God started with a blank slate and created out of nothing, God is doing something within creation. In the midst of the old, he's bringing in the new, this man God, so that we don't possess God, but God comes to get inside us, to get intimate, by breaking into time and space. God is breaking into this world order with power from another sphere. He's come from the realms of glory. And if this were not true, then what we're doing tonight is only an enchanted evening. It's only a fairy tale. God is entirely other, and yet he comes to communicate, to talk to us about his love, and to claim us as his own by paradoxically becoming this little baby. For unto us this child is born. It's not for unto Mary a child is born. It's not for unto Joseph a child is born. It's unto us. And through Christ, this boundary between heaven and earth becomes porous. It's penetrated. All through this place, Bethlehem, the least of clans becomes greater than the city of Jerusalem. This stable becomes the palace for the kingdom breaking in. This is the thin place. And if the way to lose your enthusiasm about all of this is to protect it and defend it, the way to find it again is just to make the space. And incarnational reality has a very practical way of doing this in the flesh. It's to open our eyes to the stranger, to the other, and to see Christ in them. The Celtic Church celebrates St. Bridget in February, and there's many wonderful stories about this little girl, Bridget. But one story goes that there was a famine in Ireland, and the parents decided to go out looking for food. They had prepared a single stoup of water and this bannock of bread, and they left Bridget on her own and warned her, "Don't talk to any strangers, just stay here until we return." But late that night, two travelers came to the door, an old man and this beautiful young woman. And they asked for food and they wanted somewhere to stay. And Bridget knew that she must obey her parents. And so what she did was she shared the water and she shared the bread and then went out of the house, took them to the back stable, and in the barn helped make them comfortable for the night. And when she returned to the front of the house, there was a full stoup of water there and a full bannock of bread. And she knew in her heart that she'd been dealing with much more than mere mortals. And when she looked out again, night had fallen, but the stable was surrounded by a brilliant golden light, for Christ had come to earth. And this legend of St. Bridget is our way of seeing, a way of experiencing that Christ is here, Christ is present in this world. Yes, the Christ child came once in time and history, but he continues to come every day into our lives, in the faces of our friends, but in the faces of strangers too. And soul work is so hard, isn't it? Because it's invisible work. It's nebulous. And that's why the poem goes, "I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. But I sought my brother, and I found all three." And what keeps me going in ministry is that I'm always surprised where Jesus turns up. He's rarely in the places I think he should be, but often he turns up in places I think he should never be. But that's the surprise and the beauty. And if you're open to not treating God as possession, but stepping into that thin place where you see more than what the visible eye can see, you begin to discover the rich treasure in hidden places. And you become submerged in something. It becomes easy to move from the incarnation to that baptism where you are submerged in the waters of grace, that all-encompassing love. Sometimes I think we just like to stay in sprinkle land, just a sprinkle of faith, just a sprinkle of beliefs. But when this world is going mad, a sprinkle of beliefs is not going to do it. You need to be submerged in it. I'm sure many of you have hobbies that you just love to do in your spare time. For me, I love sport. And isn't it so true? There's days when you feel tired in your body and mind and soul, and you don't feel like going to play sport. But when you plunge yourself in it, you get enthusiasm again. You get the energy back. And it's the same with God. You need to be plunged and submerged into God. Sprinklings will not do it. Because do you know what enthusiasm means? The Greek word for it is in two parts. In, and theos, in God. Enthusiasm means to be submerged in God. So how do you regain enthusiasm for this incarnation? Well, you open your life to friend and stranger, and you begin to see Christ in the world. Whenever you see that empty chair tomorrow, this is an invitation to see much more, to see eternal reality. Whenever you sense brokenness, that's the invitation to see how God might do something new again. Whenever you see your life falling apart, maybe this is the invitation to see with spiritual eyes God's holding you. God's holding you in this dance of Advent because he nimbly skips between heaven and earth. So come to the manger again. Come and worship this lowly God in the lowly manger that has become the Holy of Holies. And as we respond, I want to read this poem, Advent for the Dancing God, and then we'll sing a song, and I invite you to dance and sing and enjoy the incarnation. God is dancing still, why I do not know. Wild rains are blowing and the night is deep. Wind shatters all our human hopes, we weep for what was lost yet never was let go. How he is whirling in the wind and rain, still terrible and passionate and dear. One step too far away, one breath too near. We fear lest he may never come again. God is dancing still, though we build a wall and make some little bricks and hold our hands against the rain. God's ruthless love demands not half our room, not half our door, but all. Oh, in the darkness of a night gone out, come find me once again. Descend, be born, be racked by wind and crucified and torn, yet never stop the dance. How could I doubt? How could I doubt your peace more frightening than any pain? Your dark embrace that burns and purifies? The searching sharp enchantment of your eyes? The absolute perfection of your flame. God of all wind, all dance, all fire, all grace, heal what I cannot hold, receive my prayer, and give me strength, surrendering to bear the dark and dancing splendor of your face.